Potting's winning.
Ing is winning.
Potting is winning. Season 1, Episode 11. Pat Vint, Adam Jacoby representing the Big Ten West champions elect. What a year. I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit more probably after next week. I don't want to get too far ahead of the curve here because there is still one more game to play. But I mean, the turnaround from the sky is falling to they're going back to Indy is truly surreal. I'm not sure we had a season quite like this before.
No. And even when, like, 2008, if you just look at wins and losses and that progression, you'd be like, oh, well, you know, we've seen them turn things around before. That was not like this at all. At all.
Yeah, no.
Because that team was never, like, left for dead. That team was more like, all right, just get rid of Christensen and let's see what happens. And then they didn't. It worked. And also they had Sean Green, who was made out of lightning and tornadoes. This is all defense. And this is one unit just dragging a team into a Big Ten championship game. They're going to be massive underdogs. But they've won games as massive underdogs against Michigan and against Ohio State sort of recently, too.
Not that long
ago. Yeah.
And
all you got to do is get on the field and see what happens, right? And they're one game away from doing that.
Well, and they've done it. I mean, look, they've done a lot of it the same way. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there have been a lot of, you know, 17 to 10 finishes in the season, it feels like. But it does feel like every week they're doing something that's just a little bit crazier than the week before. And this one, I mean, you hand 260-some yards to Ibrahim. And yards in quantities that made him the Big Ten offensive player of the week in a
deservedly
loss. Yes, and absolutely deservedly. I mean, the guy was unstoppable for the entire second quarter to midway through the fourth. It's just telling that once they got down to the red zone, Iowa finds the way to get the turnover. And then once they finally force a third and long, it's immediately an interception. Like, they just they find a way to do something that most defenses don't do. You see defenses that are opportunistic, but also get torched. You see defenses that are stout and make you earn every yard, but they usually aren't also ball hawks in the way this team is. Like, it's rare that you see this kind of combination out of a collegiate defense. And I don't even have words for it anymore, because it's not as if they're getting any help from the offensive side of the ball still after all these weeks. It's just this defense over and over and over again, finding new and interesting ways to leave us completely bumfuzzled.
Yeah, and what's particularly notable about this and sort of dovetails in with what the team has been saying for weeks now is usually, if you give up over 250 rushing yards to the same guy, and he's just busting you for most of the game, you don't see that defense find a way to create not one but two turnovers in the fourth quarter in their own backyard, like in the shadow of their own goalposts, because those are the situations where, like, 19 times out of 20, that's where the defense breaks. That's where it's, and, you know, credit to them for saying, we're not taking the snap off until the game's over. You see defenses just quit. You see them lose hope. And in football, as much as you want to make it about scheming and X's and O's, at the end of the day, if your guys aren't motivated to play D, and really getting run over like Ibrahim was doing for that long causes a whole lot of guys to lose motivation, a whole lot of really, really good defenders to say, especially in 1 degree weather, yeah, this ain't happening. And hey, it's sort of been the story of their entire season, just in that little microcosm right there. And that's awesome to see. That is, for as weird as the Wisconsin game and the three wins before that were, this was sort of a, like, it felt like validation. It felt like this is what fans can feel really, really good about. It doesn't have to be perfect, doesn't even have to be great or pretty or anything like that, but that was a team that said, yeah, we're going to find a win a game and we're going to win this thing. And they did.
I mean, they've only scored over 24 points twice this season, three times. One of those was Nevada.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one was Rutgers, at Rutgers, but still Rutgers. And then Northwestern has just been terrible this year. But
yeah,
I mean, the amount, I can't even like put it together anymore. Here's the point totals given up by this team so far this year. 3, 10. They lost the game with 10. 0, 10, 27, 9, 54. That one hurt. But it was only Ohio State. Then 13, 3, 10, 10. Like, it's the best defense I've seen in a lifetime of watching Phil and Norm defenses, and I've seen some greats. Like, I never really thought I would see a defense better than the 09 team or the 15 team. And these guys blow these guys away. Lystico was on Twitter Saturday night saying, it's not even close anymore. Well, he didn't say it's not close anymore. He goes, Jack Campbell is the best linebacker in the history of Iowa football, full stop.
Yeah. And
I don't think you can argue with that really that much. I mean, and there's some really good linebackers that came out of this program.
At a minimum, I think you have to go back to Larry Station.
My thought was it's got to be like Larry Station, right? Because
yeah,
I think
you could
make the case
All-American.
For Josie Jewell at one point. You could make it the case for, you know, Abdul Hodge on pure numbers at one point. But I don't think any of them hold a candle to what Campbell's done the last couple of years. And yeah, you got to go back to Larry Station, who's a goddamn college football Hall of Famer.
Yeah. And I'm not pitting those two against each other. Find someone else to have that.
Yes, literally.
I think the fact is you stand them right next to each other, and that says enough to me. They're both incredible.
Yeah. So, you know, Iowa does it again. They find enough on offense just to get by. And honestly, it was all on short fields. At least the most important drive was, when the offense just kind of stagnated in the second half as expected. It was bitterly cold, and really you can't even put it on Petras. He didn't have a bad game.
No, Petras played one of his best games of his career. The Spenaissance is still happening.
You realize it was ironic before, right? Like
for a moment.
We weren't really considering that as a thing until, you know, well, basically this week. But 50-24, 221, on a day where Iowa didn't really have much going on in the running game, it was the classic move against an Iowa offense. You just load up against the run and make them beat you with the pass, and Iowa obliged by going 5 wide for a giant chunk of the second half, which, by the way, sent Ed Podolak into like convulsions.
that Budden Marys must have been hitting extra.
Yeah, that yeah. Podolak quarter. Was like they, at the end of the first half. They had what, 45 seconds left. They got the ball back after the Minnesota touchdown, and it was after the missed field goal. But regardless, they didn't have much time. It was not a spot where you normally saw Iowa try to make a run at a late score. and Iowa comes out five wide, and you just heard Polak go, "Oh, I don't like this."
But they did get some yardage out of it. Like,
they did. They moved the ball a little bit. Again, like it wasn't a. I mean, they ran four plays. They got 24 yards. They picked up first down before the inevitable draw for eight at the end to end the half. But you know, they showed some life for the first time in a while.
Yeah, and
now
let's also give.
Go ahead.
Well, let's also give Petrus credit because Sam Laporta, who was a frequent target in the first quarter, you know, he had 95 yards, four catches, and then he hurts his leg on that fourth quarter or fourth down play, out for the rest of the game, out for this week too. Fingers crossed for the Big Ten championship, but we're talking about three quarters without Petrus's favorite target, and he still had, in really subpar conditions, one of his best games as a starter. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
It is. And it certainly helps that Luke Lachey has developed into a very capable 1B in that spot, which, I mean, say what you will for all of the Brian Ferentz offenses, they always work better when he's got two legitimate tight ends to work with. Yes. I got to say, I was impressed. I've been impressed the last couple of weeks, really, with the development from wide receiver and left-hand starting pitcher Brody Brecht, who looked completely lost earlier this year when forced into starting duty, but had a good game against Northwestern, and then at least made a few catches against Northwestern, I should say. But then became Iowa's basically leading receiver out of the receiver core itself at Minnesota on a pretty miserable day. They're finding ways to move the ball enough to win, given that everything else is just a gigantic advantage for them. So now I go back to the same question that I asked last week. Iowa wins this week. Let's just say that they do. If they lose, sure. All bets are off.
Oh, this of all games, yeah.
Yeah, this is that's football redux if they lose this one. Let's just say they win this one.
Sure.
Is Brian Ferentz your offensive coordinator in 2023?
I think it's more likely than not at this point. Do I agree with it? No. But I mean, we've been over it before. It's something where there's not going to be that impetus from any like outside forces that's actually going to matter to Kirk, right? It's not going to, he's going to have the justification that he needs. And Kirk, say what you will about him, but he, and maybe he got this from Hayden, but he does like to traffic in narratives quite a bit. Sure. And I think a lot of coaches find success doing that. Because at the end of the day, you sort of have to find ways to motivate your players. And, if you pick the right story to tell them, and it works, then, and Kirk has nearly a quarter century of doing just that and framing things, in good times and in bad times. I mean, how many of the players have you heard talk about well, everybody wrote us off except for us, and we still believed in ourselves and blah, blah, blah. The entire defense. And they didn't all come by it on their own. You know what I mean? Like that is.
No. And, yes.
That is great coaching, right? It's narrative building, but it works.
Well, we talked about it last week. I think the coaches got a kick in the ass when the Ohio State thing went down and they went looking for the fans and couldn't find them. Right. They have looked more motivated all the way across the board coaching down since that point. And you're absolutely right. Like they're trafficking in us against the world in a very, very heavy way in the second half of this year, and more power to them because
it works.
Yeah. You go back and listen to our podcast after Ohio State. I think we're probably the world at that point, Like,
oh, totally.
we you know, I think we've been deferential to how good this defense has been all year, but the wheels were coming off according to just about everybody at that point, us included, and they have found a way to breathe some life into this thing, and just enough to make it work for the second half of the season. And they're implausibly on the verge of another division championship. This is 04, I think, if you're looking for a season to compare it to. I mean, that year you had essentially a run game that was completely ineffective due solely to injury.
Yeah.
And they somehow found a way just to string things together every week in whatever way they could to win enough games to win a share of the Big Ten. And that was when Kirk We Trust kind of began. And
I
remember reading the 05 previews and everybody, like the national guys going like, we don't know what they're doing at Iowa, but the guy can do no wrong at this point. Like the fact that he won 10, 11 or 10 games with that group, at least 11 games after the bowl with that group is insane. And then, you know, we're just now finding another round of that. It's really kind of impressive to watch. And yeah, I don't see how they make any changes at the end of the year, given they never make changes in far, far worse years.
Yeah. And I'll still stick by my thought that moving to the NFL is probably would to me, and you know what my opinion's worth, but I still think that Brian's better served in the NFL, at least for the next couple of years. I think from a personal and coaching development thing, and really the scheme that he wants to run, because they haven't talked about simplifying it for these guys at all. And I don't expect that to happen either. Like, I do think that at the end of the day, he's probably not best served here. But if they don't, if Brian's good with it, if Kirk's good with it, we know Gary's going to be good with it. And if it fits into this narrative that Kirk wants to say about, well, it's complementary football, we're finding ways to win. We've won two consecutive Big Ten Wests.
I don't even think it's going to be that. I think it's going to be what we heard earlier this year. It's going to be, I don't know if you guys noticed, we just won back-to-back division championships.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't. It'll be dismissive. It won't. Yeah, it's not going to be like, hey, we're going to justify this. It's going to be as dismissive as it could possibly be.
Yeah.
And you know what? And at this point, despite the fact that the offense still kind of sucks out loud, it works. Whatever they're doing seems to be working right now because it wins games in the ugliest manner imaginable.
And if there's anybody, you know, outside of the top 10. Who's earned more benefit of the doubt than Kirk in terms of how this all gets run, like, let me know.
You know what's funny?
He's been trafficking in benefit of the doubt, and it just keeps working for him.
Yeah. You know what's funny? It was last Friday, our old friend Spencer Hall was on Levitard talking about just, you know, general college football stuff, and they asked him, because they were talking about how crazy Alabama is going to be once Nick Saban is gone. And the question was, what fan base is the most sane? Like what fan base has the least amount of like this Alabama, Auburn sort of and Miami sort of stuff is Levitard. And he brought up Michigan at first and he was like, well, Michigan's got a different level of insanity because they think doing it the right way is really important. So they'll take 10-2 if it's done the right way, but it has to also include a win over Ohio State or that just destroys their soul. And they were like, all right, well, putting that aside, like who's just generally reasonable. And he's like, you have to go to the teams that probably that maybe even have a right to ask for better, like Iowa. there's certainly a section of that fan base who will come up and yell at you if you say anything negative about Kirk Ferentz, but they've had two coaches in 40 years. And before that, they were abjectly terrible. They've seen what the floor looks like. This is a much higher floor. They're going to be happy with that sort of 8-5 thing. And you're not going to get a whole lot of heat from those fans if that's what they're getting. And he's exactly right. You and I have talked about this for a decade now.
Yeah.
That's where you get the lack of pressure to do anything different. right? Because even at 8-4, and 8-4 in most years is a perfectly fine year for Iowa, but it's something that we kind of go ho-hum about anymore. 8-4 with a division championship is a whole different ballgame, totally. Even in a particularly bad Big Ten West. And if you're an Iowa fan and you're complaining about that, you're certifiable. Like, you've lost your mind.
Yeah, and you're also not going to find a whole lot of fans around you who are going to join you in that fight.
Right.
And exactly. And that has a real cooling effect on that brand of insanity. Now, obviously, you go online and these fans obviously find each other pretty easily. And they can rile each other up without a whole lot of difficulty. But I think you're right. The vast majority, and we don't really need to draw the parallels too closely with the silent majority or anything like that. But most Iowa fans are like, hey, look, we've got another winning record. And I think a big part of that, especially for the fans who are old enough to remember this, and the fans who aren't, are just used to winning at this point. But go back to 99. They replaced Dr. Tom, who was going to NCAA tournaments nearly every year, with this big, hypey, sleazeball, and it blows up even worse than the most pessimistic of people could have imagined. And I think that there is some residual, I don't think it's even conscious, but I think there's a little bit of residual fear about, if you dump Kirk for, Lane Kiffin, let's throw that one out there, that if that goes belly up, not only is it going to embarrass Iowa fans, and Iowa fans haven't had a reason to be embarrassed since the 70s in football, but it's also going to take a lot of time and a real home run hire to dig Iowa out of that hole, because that's basically what Fran ended up being. And in basketball, you only have to recruit 12 guys. Football, if you fall down a hole and you don't hire Kirk Ferentz to be the one guy who knows how to turn it all around, because he studied under the master of the turnaround. And I don't know if there's anybody else left out there.
Are you talking about Ted Marchabrota?
Yes. Frank Reich.
Frank Reich.
But there's this sneaking little fear of being on the precipice, getting knocked off the cliff, and basically finding yourself as the Iowa State of 2 hours east, and not the fun Iowa State, but the Iowa State that we grew up watching.
I don't even think that the Dr. Tom thing is subconscious. I think it's absolutely right there in the front of everybody's minds. Because if you hopped on Twitter, even in, the worst of times this season, right? Even post Ohio State, when the sky is falling.
Yeah.
If you had hopped on Twitter, where most of the crazy Iowa fans live, and you had mentioned, I think it's time we get rid of Kirk Ferentz, I guarantee you would get at least 5 responses of who you're going to hire in response. That's always the question, because the one time that they tried to fly too close to the sun, they bought a Steve Alford and ended up having the wings melt. And so there's just a certain amount of like, this is fine. And this is fine. These are a lot more fun to do when we're winning games like this than it is when we're getting stomped by Ohio State and we don't know what's going to happen next. Right.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't care if we're winning 13-10. Floyd is still in Iowa City, so I don't give a damn how it gets there as long as it's there. I don't give a damn if the Heroes Trophy comes back in a 3-0 win as long as the Heroes Trophy is still ours at the end of the day on Friday, right? Like,
right.
You can win ugly for as many games as you need to in a given year. And I don't even give a damn if you guys get creamed in Indianapolis. I lived through that last year and came out just fine.
And we're at that point, if Iowa gets back to Indianapolis, it's house money.
Yes.
Right. Because nobody expected it to happen. And at least last year, that was a team that had spent a little bit of time, a little undeserved, but a little bit of time in the top 5. And so people carried those expectations through to Indianapolis, even when it was abundantly clear that Iowa was not actually a top five team. And Iowa was a little bit lucky to have double digit wins. Now it's, hey, look, just get them on the field, see what happens. If we get blown out by Michigan or Ohio State, well, we've already seen that show. There's what are they going to do? Beat us more? Like,
yeah. I mean, you realize if they win on this is an incredible stat. If they win on Friday, they will enter the Northwestern game next year at Wrigley Field, by the way, with a 4-year November unbeaten streak intact.
And that's like that, it'll be 15-0 at that point, right?
Yeah, and that's pure coaching. I don't give a damn absolutely. What you say. That is absolutely pure coaching. That this program, with all the hiccups it has early in seasons, can go 4 years without losing a game in November and do it in the last 2 years in some pretty rough circumstances. I mean, they lost two bad ones at the end of October last year.
Sure.
To drop out of number two in the country,
mm-hmm.
and then pulled it back together. This year, yeah. The sky is falling. They get a win against Northwestern that everybody kind of expected. But I don't think anybody expected the rest of this other than the guys in that locker room. And
I think you're right.
They've pulled that off again, which is just it's shocking. I am dumbfounded and ecstatic about the whole thing. And you know what? Bring them all back. I don't care at this point. I'll keep watching all these games and agonizing over how miserable the offense is. If it means that at the end of the day, I can just go, yep, that's fine. We win anyway.
Right.
And you look, if you look at the roster right now, I mean, they lose some guys. Don't get me wrong. Obviously Campbell, Moss, they're gonna lose some guys on the defensive line, but this defense still looks like it's ready to reload.
Well, for crying out loud, they haven't even needed Wampa or TJ yeah. Hall.
Yeah.
Like,
you got a 5-star guy that's barely seen the field this year because there's just too many guys.
Yeah. And like, and at no point have you been like, well, get X-Man out there. Like,
yeah.
Even, and that's with injuries to Justin Jacobs, who may or may not be back, and who all of a sudden has a reason to come back if he wants it. Yes. And Scary Terry. Right?
Yeah, Scary, like, we've barely seen Terry Roberts all year. And it turns out that that you can plug in Cooper DeJean for all the roles where somebody left, and he does just fine. He's the best gunner in the Big Ten. he's the best corner on the team with an All-American on the other side of the ball. And and he's a more than capable replacement for Charlie Jones. There's a Freudian slip at punt returner.
Absolutely.
There's nothing the guy can't do. Make him the quarterback.
QB1 in our hearts.
QB1 in on the field. That's what we want.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
it's amazing.
Now let's play the other side of the coin here. There are a number of very young assistants on this team, particularly one who seems to be up against a bit of a glass ceiling.
Yes.
Is there a possibility we lose some guys off this coaching staff, not because of terminations, but because of it's time to move to the next thing? I'm looking at you, LeVar Woods.
Yes, that is, he's sort of the caffeinated elephant in the room. And look, if it is time for him to move on and see what else is out there for him, great. Good for him. Because one, there's no reason to expect that, you know, offensive coordinator is going to be there for him. There's definitely no reason to expect that defensive coordinator is going to be there for him unless Phil decides, hey, this is my magnum opus. This is the perfect way for me to go out. And we have heard no reason to believe that that's going to be the case.
Right.
Right. So
what would Phil do if he wasn't coaching? Right. He's got to be coordinating a defense somewhere because that's all he's going to do. That's he would die in 5 minutes if he wasn't doing that.
Can you imagine him just like sitting down on a Saturday afternoon and just like flipping on the television and watching an average defense? Like he would, it would become a medical emergency for him. I don't think he could do that.
I could
So,
just see him like sitting in a rocking chair on his porch and then just like twitching and looking violent the whole time. It's like, what
And
am I doing
you know, at the end of the day, he's 59 years old, right? He's
Yeah.
not 80.
Right.
So, and also, I didn't expect him to own, still be in his 50s when I started that sentence when I was Googling it. So yeah, like he's going to be there for a while. He's going to be there for as long as he wants to be, and
Yes.
great, great.
Yes.
And also for reasons we have gone over 70 times, no reason to expect Ryan to be gone at this point. There's really not.
Well,
So
and frankly, if I'm LeVar Woods, I don't want Iowa offensive coordinator next.
right.
That's a death trap. That's a suicide rap. We got to get out while you're young, man. They're like, no, we that job is not what you want now. Could you throw an associate head coach on the back of his title and give him a bit of a salary bump and say, you know, we're not saying coach in waiting, but wink, wink.
Right.
You know,
I wouldn't mind it.
that'd be fine. I'd be okay with that. I do go back to Split Zone Duo literally today, talking about the Mark Stoops extension and Stephen Godfrey saying that this guarantees that Stoops is not going anywhere until the day that Kirk Ferentz retires. So there are other options potentially out there that might have a little bit more experience, but I don't know if there's anybody I would want in that job more than LeVar Woods at this point. If it was to open tomorrow, and I'm not saying it will, I wouldn't expect that it is, but I could see him looking for, I wouldn't even say coordinator is the next spot. I think you look for, you know, FCS or maybe even group of five head jobs and see if there's something that pops up.
I can see
Absent
it.
that, it's a tough spot to be better at than where he's at right now, except for the fact that he seems to be kind of limited in whether the next move is going to be if he's going to stay in Iowa City.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, at the very least, the best Power Five schools that in terms of taking care of their assistant coaches usually take care of them at pay levels that are very, very comparable to group of five and certainly better than the vast majority of FCS head coaching spots. So that, you know, as long as LeVar is taken care of, then there's no reason to believe that Kirk wouldn't do that. You know, he might find that the grass is green enough where he is, and he gets to coach special teams at a frankly elite level. And you know, how much has he learned from Kirk in terms of the, you know, administration and delegation and all of the stuff that goes into leading a college football program? Because at the end of the day, you know, knowing your X's and O's is one thing, but it's only one thing. You're basically babysitting 85 to 100, 18 to 22 year olds.
Yeah.
And you know, some guys have more of an appetite for that than others. Phil certainly doesn't, because we would have seen that
Yeah,
long
he was seen
before
that
now.
years ago if that was the case. Yeah, I don't think that Phil has ever wanted to do the head coaching, media, hand-holding, fundraising stuff, right? When was the last time you saw Phil Parker give a speech to an I Club? Like, could you imagine what that would look like?
It would be agony for
And
everybody
hey, by the
involved.
way, LeVar's making $625,000 this year. You get $185,000 pay bump this season.
Deserved.
Yeah, yes, absolutely well deserved. I'm not casting any dispersions on that. I'm just saying that's less than you're going to make as a head coach at like, you know, a MAC level, but not by that much.
Not by that
And
much. And
you
you
have
have
literally no risk
security.
being here. Yeah.
Bingo.
Absolute security.
So that is, you know, does he want to also be that front-facing sort of guy? Like, I think he's got more of that energy that fans, especially casual fans, can latch onto. Hearing the anecdotes that say, you know, Petrus and Padilla were talking about on the McCaffrey Kids podcast, the good morning, F that, great morning. Like, that is something that I think could sort of play in the right spot. But, does he want to be that guy for the public every day, or does he get that energy out of being in a coaching role and just sharing that energy with, the players around him? And we don't know the answer to that question yet. And it'll be interesting to see how Ferentz keeps managing that for as long as this whole thing is in place. Do you even start giving LeVar more, like press opportunities? Because we don't see him in post games very often, and it sort of feels like we could, right? Yeah. Like, but if he doesn't want it, he doesn't want it. And if he doesn't want it as special teams coordinator of the University of Iowa, is he really going to want it as head coach of Bowling Green? There's nowhere to hide when you're a head coach. And LeVar doesn't seem like much of a hider, but he also doesn't come out a whole lot. So there's a lot of questions that I don't know the answer to, and I'm not sure a whole lot of other people know either.
Yeah, there's, again, the risk, if you take that job, you take that Mac job, you certainly have a path, if it goes well, to move into a Power 5 spot, probably more quickly than you do waiting for Iowa to come open and hoping that you're the one who ends up getting it. You also run the risk of it not going well, right? Yeah. And on top of it all, it's not like you're going to go in and set the world on fire and in 2 years be immediately up for another job in most circumstances, especially for the jobs that are going to be open in like a Mac or a Mountain West program currently. Does it make more sense just to wait it out and see what happens here, especially if I was willing to give you some sort of a title bump to go along with it? Now, Kirk, I don't think Kirk has done the associate head coach thing since Soup Campbell. And obviously Soup never got the job. So I don't know if that's something that he's even interested in doing. He doesn't have much of a coaching tree to speak of. It's not like he sent a bunch of guys off to be head coaches elsewhere.
Especially from guys who have coached here over the last 10 years, right? Like Philbin was, a winner. Ken O'Keefe coached in the NFL, but Kirk has not really been in the Hayden mold of hire guys who want to be head coaches. He was in the first half of this. Not now.
He's hiring guys from Northern Illinois and former players. That's pretty much what he does now. And you know what? It seems to be working pretty much across the board with one potentially notable exception.
Bingo.
He's a former player too. I don't know. It'll be an interesting offseason. It could very well be that nothing happens.
And it wouldn't surprise me all that much. No. Yeah.
If everybody stays, that would be a perfectly plausible explanation. I do think the heat has come off of George Barnett. They didn't look good 2 weeks ago. The line was pretty shaky against Wisconsin, but it certainly improved.
Wisconsin's also got some dudes too. Jack Herbig makes a lot of guys look bad.
But they seem to have found enough with the line to at least make the running game work a little bit here and there. And obviously that came through in the win at Purdue. So I don't see a change there. The rest of the guys are pretty well entrenched or are so new, like Abdul Hodge, that you're not going to see them go somewhere else just yet. So it wouldn't be a surprise to me if the whole staff stays. I think the two wild cards there are Woods and Brian. And then,
distant
third to Seth Wallace is probably ready for a DC role somewhere. And if Phil's not going anywhere anytime soon, that might be the other one that might make a move.
But he's also probably, like, when I say replaceable, that is not pejorative. You can be good and replaceable.
Sure.
And I think that Seth is probably in that spot right now. And hey, move on up. More power to you. And if anybody knows how to figure out who to replace you, it's probably Kirk and Phil, right?
Yeah. All right. But before we get to that, is there any way Iowa loses this game on Friday?
Absolutely, yes. Of course there is. I believe that there is, like, it would be a little bit fitting, and not in a I'm happy with this result. I would be furious. I would be melting down, and our podcast would be, you would need a hazmat suit to listen to it. But, you know, for as much meat has been left on the bone by the offense this year, and Nebraska's defense, give them a little bit of credit, has not, like, completely tanked on the season yet. You look at the last four games they've played against Big Ten West competition. You know, they've held teams to 26 or under points. And these are teams that have similar offenses, you know, in their own way, similar styles as Iowa's offense. So, you know, they could potentially keep Iowa's offense in check, keep in, you know, they're going to need a little bit of luck in terms of, you know, maybe a field goal gets missed, maybe there's a fumble that bounces their way. Like, it would take luck. I don't think it's likely, and it's only borderline plausible. But at the end of the day, you know, we're talking about a team like Iowa's favored by 9, not 49. And Nebraska, they've still got a little bit of pride. And look, if Iowa State isn't the Cyclone Super Bowl anymore, the Heroes game might be Nebraska's Super Bowl. Like,
oh God.
They're our new little brother now. And it would really make a whole lot of players happy to spoil Iowa's spot at a division championship. Like, I think that is a genuine motivating factor for them. So could we see Nebraska play their one, like, good game of the year? We could. Again, I don't think it's likely. I don't want it to happen. But if you're asking me, is there a chance? Of course there is. Of course.
And I will say this, because I've seen it happen before. Kirk didn't like Scott Frost. I promise that.
Yeah. Right?
In what I've seen of Mickey Joseph, I could see Kirk liking Mickey Joseph, and that's when it gets scary, because that's a Tim Brewster getting fired situation at that point. Like,
yeah.
I don't think they take the foot off the accelerator here, because there is that us against the world thing that they've really been playing off of, and they seem to be motivated, and I think they're probably about as motivated as they've been since, you know, we had to examine where Iowa is as a program in 2015. Mm-hmm.
And they get a title to play for too.
And they got a title to play for, right? I mean, you got that, yeah. You got all the, but don't underestimate Kirk kind of liking the cut of the jib of the opposing coach, especially in the interim. Not that he's not going to try to win the game. Don't get me wrong, but you saw it this week, right? Iowa going 5 wide with 38 seconds left in the first half. Is in large part, I think, because of PJ Fleck. You know, you don't see the we figured we'd leave the timeouts and take the pig home against anybody else, right?
Correct. Yeah,
he hasn't liked that guy since the day that PJ Fleck said that he would love to throw his hat into the ring when Kirk retired.
Of course,
he's been pissed at that guy ever since. He beat him 59-14 that night, right? Like,
look. Like, Jeff Brohm had Kirk's number for years and years and years. And then Brohm decided he wanted a couple of Iowa's wide receivers. And, oh, Kirk.
Yeah.
had a slightly different approach to the Purdue game after that happened. Like, he gets these resentments in his head and turns them into butt kickings.
Yes.
And if it works, it works.
Well, let's hope it works.
Yeah.
I really don't want to live in a world where we lose this game.
I don't either. You especially. You have, like, you're surrounded by it. And you will be hearing nothing but that for the next 9 months if it happens.
Oh,
nothing but that.
I know.
Yeah.
Hey, how about that Hawkeye basketball team?
They're great. They're really good. They belong
okay, I know
here.
it's only
They're
been
in
four
the top
games.
25.
I know it's only been four games, but KenPom started tracking offensive and defensive tempo separately in the 09-10 season.
Okay.
Iowa is currently number one in turnover rate and number three in offensive tempo. Can you name the only other team during that time to post top five in both of those categories for an entire season?
I think that would probably be Iowa 2 years ago.
No.
Iowa last year.
Iowa last year was probably the closest you're going to get from a team you're going to really think of close by. So if you did, if you did top five in turnover margin and top 25 in tempo, there have been two teams that have done that.
Okay.
Iowa last year was one of those two teams.
And what's the other?
But the only other team that's done top five is the Jimmer Fredette BYU team.
Oh my God.
That's what we're watching right now. Like, they're entertaining as hell.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Chris and Murray is on one right now in ways that not even, I don't think I even saw Keegan do it at any point last year. Like, he's just insane.
He is ripping and pulling as soon as, like, if he's squared up and gets the ball behind the arc, it's going up, and he is lethal. His defense is great. It's pretty close to on par with Keegan's already. And, that is a welcome step up from last year. He wasn't bad last year, but he has absolutely taken a step up on defense. There was a moment about 10 minutes into the first half against Omaha where Iowa had come out a little bit slow.
Yep.
And then they just went into avalanche mode and dropped about 16 points in 2 or 3 minutes, just burying everything they see, forcing turnovers, running. And it felt like Fran's dream come true, right? Like, everything that he says about, well, you're going to play loose, you're going to play confidently, you've always got a green light, you know, trust your teammates, just rip it and go. And that's exactly what we were watching. And I'm sure that some part of him was like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's
well,
like, that's Fran ball right there.
Of players that have had 24% of their possessions used or more, he's second nationally in efficiency.
Good Lord.
147.7, which is, like, that's insane. The sad part is the only person who's better than him so far is in the conference.
Zach Edey?
Trace Jackson Davis.
No, I can't believe that guy's still there.
How is he still there? Edey's sixth, by the way, so he's right there. By the way, Tucker DeVries is fourth. Man, what a time to be alive.
Dude, Tucker is a baller.
Yeah, he's fantastic. All right, well, we'll switch into basketball mode here in a couple of weeks, hopefully. Not after next week, because there should still be one more football game before we... Oh, God. Hey, Jack Nungy's 25th.
Yes. Good for him.
Yeah, good for Jack
Nungy.
Good
for him.
Acker from Samford, whose name actually, if you run by it too fast, looks like Anchor, is 15th. Anyway, so we have probably one more week of football, I'm hoping, before we hit bowl season and we turn this thing into a basketball podcast. But we'll slowly shift our way into basketball mode here in the coming weeks. And we might not be quite as frequent as every week at that point, but we'll do our best to keep up. In the interim, God damn, go Hawks. Beat go Nebraska. Hawks. Win the West. I've already got a headline ready to go. I already ran it by Jerry Hinnan one night after a couple cocktails. He's on board with it. Yeah.
We'll keep it under wraps.
We need a win. Yes. I got a material we need a win for. Go Iowa Awesome. Talk to you next week.